We have enemies. It's very clear that we have enemies. Our enemies have made themselves known to us, particularly over the past few weeks. They've sent us all sorts of gifts, messages from them flying across over to our cities, and they've let us know that they're our enemies. But our enemies have many faces. And their tactics against us are multiple. Sometimes they attack us militarily. Sometimes they attack us through terrorism or other violent attacks. But often, and I think this connects to Rabbi Berman's point at the end, often they choose other methods in which to attack us. And particularly nowadays, what I think many of us are even more infuriated by than the actual violence is the glaring and infuriating double standard that the world seems to employ. I mentioned earlier that I was in Chutz La'aretz when this war broke out. The first day when we targeted that Hamas fellow over there, I was in some airport, I believe it was in Chicago, and I was waiting to board a plane, and I was watching the CNN screens. And I first saw the video clip of the exploding car. And then I saw a brief clip, I believe it was of President Obama, who came out and actually supported us, which we were all, I guess, very happy to hear. Then I heard that our Prime Minister thanked President Obama for agreeing that we had the right to defend ourselves. And I guess it was, in fact, worthy of saying thank you, but that itself is somewhat infuriating. And then I heard the CNN announcer explain that the reason that Israel is conducting these raids is because Israel considers Hamas to be a terrorist organization. Which is also a true statement. Israel does consider Hamas to be a terrorist organization, but of course the implication that there's something that's debatable about this. And we're all familiar, I could go on and on and on, there's no need to talk about the double standard, there's no need to talk about the world coming and telling us that we have to have a proportionate response. You actually win wars with a disproportionate response. That's how you win the war. It's as almost as if the world is telling us it's okay if we can defend ourselves as long as we don't ever actually win, because then there won't be anyone to attack us tomorrow. It's as if the world needs that to be there. The United Nations Security Council, I believe I read that one out of every four Security Council resolutions ever passed is about Israel, and almost all of them, if not all, condemning us. And it boggles the mind. I once pointed out there are, let's compare two countries that both start with the letter I. Israel and India. Let's say someone came from outer space, a Martian who knows nothing, landed on this planet. And I told him, I want to tell you about these two countries. One of them is home to 1.2 billion people. That's one out of every five human beings on planet Earth. And the other is home to about 6 million people. That's about one in a thousand. One of these two countries is on the front page of every major newspaper in the world at least once a week. The other one is barely heard about for months at a time. Which is which? It defies all logic. It defies all rationality. The world is obsessed with us. And they're obsessed with us in ways that seem increasingly negative, critical. The types I was also recently, just last week, I was in Toronto, and I met with a few of my students there. I had the opportunity to give a shiur to some of the young women that studied here in the past, and opportunity to maintain the connection. And they were telling me about what goes on in their universities there in Toronto, and the what's it called, boycott, divestment, BDS or something, and the Israel Apartheid Week, and some wall that is put up on one of the campuses, which is meant to represent, the wall that we've built that somehow is meant to portray how we oppress the poor innocent Palestinians, and the things that have been said to them. Another student today showed me, one of my students who's in Columbia University, posted something on a public message board in support of Israel, and she came back the next day to find it torn down, and posted something again and found it covered up. And we could go on and on and on. And the question I want to try to address briefly is why? Why does this happen? The fact that we have enemies, perhaps they think we stole our land, perhaps it's based on religious considerations, that's something that I guess we can understand. There are conflicts all over the world. And there is bias and prejudice and hatred all over the world. But there's something unique about the hatred that's directed towards us. There's something universal about it. There's something that defies general logic and needs to be understood. And what I want to try to show you is that this phenomenon goes back to the very beginning of time. And the many faces of our enemies can be seen already in the Torah. On the title of the shiur, I mentioned Esav and Lavan, because those are the parshiot that we're reading now. But I want to actually show you four different examples. One going back to last week's parsha, two of them actually going back to last week's parsha, one from this coming week's parsha, and one from elsewhere in Tanakh. And I want to try to see how the very same phenomena that we see today is already there in the Torah, and then ask very briefly if we can make any sense about it. So the first one I want to look at, the first source on your sheet, Yitzchak Avinu. This little passage here is termed by Nechama Leibovitz as the first recorded example of anti-Semitism. And we're told that Yitzchak Avinu, this we read last Shabbat, Yitzchak Avinu settled in the land of the Plishtim. Vayizra Yitzchak ba'aretz ahi vayimtza ba'shana ahi me'ashe arim. He was very, very successful. Vayivarcheu Hashem. He was successful financially. He started a business, and he was very, very profitable, his business, and successful. He had many possessions. They were jealous of him. Yitzchak's father Abraham had also lived once in this land and had dug wells which could provide water, which could be of benefit to everyone. And the Plishtim who lived in this land after Abraham left, who could have benefited from those wells themselves, in defiance of their own self-interest, filled up the wells just so that they could eradicate any reference, any memory of what Abraham had done, that once upon a time there had been a Jew here. And against their own interest, they filled up the wells. And then they banished Yitzchak from their midst. Vayomer Avimelech el Yitzchak, leich meimanu ki atzamta mimenu meot. And we read on here how he had to go and redig the wells and tenaciously call them by the same names his father had called them. And every time he dug a well, they drove him out. They said, no, that's our water, that's our water. And the parallels here to those who today carry a name that's derived from the Plishtim. Right, I put here on the page a famous immortal quote from Abba Iban, who was once Israel's foreign minister, who said that the Palestinians have never lost a chance to miss an opportunity. And this was a frustrated statement coming from a person who believed that they would act in their own self-interest. And we see how to their own people, Rabbi Berman mentioned earlier, and there are other examples as well. They keep their people locked up in refugee camps. They fire rockets from hospitals and from behind their own children. And any opportunity they have, every offer that's made that could improve their standard of living or their situation. Even he mentioned the young people in the university here who are benefiting from an education that's being paid for by the Israeli government and protesting that government, living in a democracy so that they can get themselves, fulfill their dreams and live under a repressive government that wouldn't allow them to do that. The Chola Beirot Asher Chafru Sitmum Plishtim Vaymalum Afar. Just if they can somehow hurt us, they're willing to sacrifice their own interests, despite the hatred is so irrational. So we saw this in the Torah, and we see it today. The second source, we also read in last week's parsha, Esav. Vayistom Esav at Yaakov ala bracha asher bercho avi. We know that Yaakov stole, let's even use that term, stole the brachot from Esav. And we know that Esav was upset. Indeed, it's annoying. It's frustrating. Twice, he said, Vayakveni ze pa'amayim, et bechorati lakach, he took the birthright, or he convinced me to sell it, and now birchati. But let's keep a sense of proportion here. The things that Yaakov took from Esav were intangible. He didn't steal money from him. He didn't take any actual power from him. It was about, at least in Esav's mind, assumedly, Vayivez Esav et ha-bechora. It was about sentimentality. It was about his father's affection. We understand that Esav was offended. But the reaction, Vayomer Esav b'livo, Yikrivu yimei evel avi, ve'ahargat Yaakov achi. May my father's days of mourning come quickly. I hope my father dies soon, because I respect my father after all, so I would never kill my brother in front of him. So I hope my father dies soon, so I can only kill my brother. And when we look at, again, the type of things we see today, the rage, right? What was it, just a few weeks ago, somebody made a really, really bad movie that insulted those people. They said it was us. In the end, it turned out to have been an Arab, right? A really, really bad movie that somehow insulted Islam, and they started running around and literally killing people over it, right? And usually we're the victims of that, right? The rage, the talk of pride, just complete loss of any sense of proportion. When the Jewish people are involved, we saw that in Esav, and we see that today as well. But then we have other faces. The faces of the Plishtim and of Esav, the spite, the fury, the direct hostility, that's one form of anti-Semitism. That's one form of opposition. But there are other forms as well. And Yaakov, we read this Shabbat, Vayetze Yaakov mi Beersheva Vayelech Harana, running away from Esav, seeking refuge in a different place, in exile, but with family. Lavan, after all, is his uncle. And he goes there, and he's productive, he's a member of the family, takes care of Lavan's sheep, brings success to Lavan's household, marries Lavan's daughters, he's literally his son-in-law and his nephew. And he finally comes to the conclusion after Lavan continually takes advantage of him and takes advantage of him and takes advantage of him that he has to leave. He runs away. And we have here in source number 4, Vayugad l'Lavan b'yom ha-shlishi ki varach Yaakov. When Lavan becomes aware that Yaakov has fled, he chases after him to confront him. And Hashem appeared to Lavan and warned him not to hurt Yaakov. He realized that the time has come, he's going to have to call a ceasefire. For now at least, he's not going to be able to actually harm him. But he still has to have his word. And so, we read here, Pasuk Chavav, how does he present himself? Vayomer Lavan. By the way, his name even, Lavan. He appears white. He appears, I'm sorry? Right, okay, could be. He presents himself, it could be Lashon Sagi Nahor, it could be that he presents himself as someone who's puts on a different face. And he comes to him and he says, Yaakov, Ma Sita, Vatignov Levavi, why did you betray me like that? You took my daughters and you ran off with them as if they were captives. Why did you run away? Why didn't you just tell me you wanted to leave? I would have made a whole party for you. I would have given you proper respect. Why are you reacting in such a way? You didn't even let me kiss my grandchildren. What a heartless person you are. And again, we see here echoes of the same types of things. The hypocrisy. The accusations. The coming forth and saying, We're your friends. We have unwavering commitment to your security. We are here for you. We are on your side. What we want is to make sure that we save you from yourself. And if you only wouldn't act this way, we're coming as your friends to embrace you and to show you how you can be successful. And how dare you? How dare you treat us this way? So that's another phase. And Lavan, his aim is no different really than that of the Plishtim or that of Esav. It's only his tactic, it's only his method that is different. And one more. Later on in the Bible, we read of a man named Haman, who came up with the final solution to the Jewish problem. And he went to his master, Achashverosh, Vayomer Haman Lamelech Achashverosh, and listened to his words. Listen to the way in which he described the problem that he felt needed to be solved. Yeshno Am Echad, Mifuzar Umifurad Bein Ha'amim. There is one nation scattered among the people, among the nations. Can one think of a more eloquent description of who we are? Ironically, from the mouth of our enemy. Yeshno Am Echad Mifuzar Umifurad Bein Ha'amim. B'chol Midinot Malchutecha, an international network. V'datehem Shonot Mikolam. And they're different. They have their own ways. They don't fit in. V'datei HaMelech Einam Osim V'LaMelech Ein Shoveh LaHanicham Im Al HaMelech Tov Yikatev LaAbdam. In the next source, I hesitated whether I could even put it on the same page as Pesukim from Tanakh. But we have here, in a book known as Mein Kampf, words that are almost identical. And he describes here the contemporary Haman, who also came up with a plan, Lashmid la'arog u'la'abed et kol ha'yudim minar v'ad zaken taf v'nashim. The exact same plan to eradicate. The only difference between Haman and Hitler is that one was foiled before he was able to accomplish anything, and tragically the other got part of the way there. The goal was identical, and the philosophy essentially identical. He describes here in this book at least how he wants his readers to feel he came to his hatred of the Jews. He describes here an incident that happened when he was a young person walking through Vienna, and he met a person who was a Jew. My first thought was, is this a Jew? I observed the man furtively and cautiously, but the longer I stared at this foreign face, scrutinizing feature for feature, the more my first question assumed a new form. Is this a German? And I could no longer doubt that the objects of my study were not Germans of a special religion, but a people in themselves. They're not just people with a different religion, with a different culture, with a different heritage. They are an Am, Echad, Mefuzar, Mefurad, Bein Amim. And in the second passage I quoted there, he says it even more specifically. The Jewish state was never spatially limited in itself, but universally unlimited as to space, though restricted in the sense of embracing but one race. Consequently, this people has always formed a state within the state. So here again we see the echoes of that which was laid out in the Tanakh, playing itself out through history. It's almost as if this is built into the fabric of history. And indeed, as Rashi tells us in next week's parsha, halakha hi biyadua. It's a halakha. It's known. It's part, in fact, it's part of the fabric of the universe. She'esav sonei li'Yaakov. What's the meaning of all this? Where does it come from? How can it be understood? And what in the world are we to do about it? I think there's only one answer. And looking back at the prophetic words of the Torah, where these models are presented to us, the very where we read the Tanakh and we see our own contemporary reality staring at us from the page, and we look at it through that prism, I think there's a very clear understanding that comes out. our enemies. And I could have shown you others also if I had more time. We could have looked at Bilam, who, if you want to look into this more, that is perhaps one of the most fascinating places to read the prophecies of Bilam, and to see how someone who came out to curse us wound up presenting perhaps the most eloquent and the most beautiful and accurate and insightful descriptions of who we are. But what comes out of this is that our enemies recognize something that we ourselves often try very hard to ignore. And that is that we are unique, that we are different. Yes, indeed we are. Am Echad, Mifuzar Mifarad, one nation scattered throughout the world. And yes, as much as we choose at times to try to deny it, Datehem Shonot Mikolam, we're different from all the others. Rabbi Berman said earlier, we're not trying to convince the rest of the world. What we need to convince is ourselves. I'll go a step further. We don't need to convince the rest of the world. Don't be fooled. Everyone around the world recognize, or at least there are people around the world who recognize, in every nation, in every society, who recognize what we ourselves often try to deny. And that is that we are unique, and that we're here for a purpose, and that we represent something. Many years ago, I was one of the assistant directors of New Jersey NCSY. And we once ran a program for a group of non-observant kids that we were trying to recruit to join the organization to get more involved. We ran a program about anti-Semitism. And we tried to connect with them on that level. And one of the fellows I worked with, by the name of Gershon Steinberg, got up at the end and he said something that was so concise and I thought so profound. He said to the kids, "You want to fight anti-Semitism? Then you got to be a Semite. You've got to understand that these people are not rejecting us. They're rejecting what we represent. And therefore, the way to fight them back is to commit ourselves even more to representing what we represent." And this is also told to us in the Torah. The last two sources I put on the page basically sketch out for us the entire pattern of Jewish history. The entire pattern of Jewish history is found in the Torah. If I had more time, I teach here in MMY a full semester-long course about this, and maybe one day I'll actually finish the book I'm trying to write on it. But for now, I won't tell you the whole story as laid out in the Torah. I'll show you only, like any good summary, the beginning and the end. We have here one source from the very dawn of Jewish history, where it all began. Vayomer Hashem el Avram, lech lecha. Those words, those immortal words that continue to ring out through all of us, especially those of us who've been privileged to follow in those footsteps and perform our own lech lecha. Lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladzecha mibeit avicha. Leave everything behind and go el ha'aretz asher areka. And for what purpose? Avraham was told, ve'escha legoi gadol, va'avarechecha, va'gadla shemecha, ve'heye bracha. And many of us read these words with comfort and yet misunderstand them. Many of us read these words and think that what Avram was told is separate yourself out from the rest of the world, go off and hide in your own land by yourself, and for that I will reward you. I want to choose you to be privileged. I want to choose you to be separate from the others because you're the one I really care about. And that is a false reading of this pasuk, because it ignores the pasuk that follows. Yes, Hashem said to Avraham, you will be blessed and you will be rewarded. But why? Va'avarcha mevarechecha umekalelcha aor. Through you, other people, their fortunes will be determined by how they relate to you. Those who bless you will ultimately be blessed. Those who curse you will be cursed. In the long run, those who ally themselves with you will be successful. Those who oppose you ultimately will meet their demise. And the goal of this all is v'nivrechu v'cha kol mishpechot ha'adama. Through you, all the world will be blessed. We were not chosen to be isolated. We were not chosen for privilege. We were chosen for a mission. A mission that ultimately is meant to impact the rest of the world and to elevate and to transform the world. And it is that very mission that on the one hand is succeeding Rabbi Berman mentioned earlier, there are billions of people in the world today, billions, who believe in the Torah. And if you look at the Rambam, at the end of Hilchot Malachim, in a censored passage, which has only in the last few decades become available, you'll see that the Rambam himself spoke about this, and how this is a major step, how the religions that are based on the Torah and have spread throughout the world are a major step towards the redemption of the entire world. So on the one hand, our messages are getting heard, and our messages are getting through, but there's resistance. The messages are difficult. And they blame the messenger. And that's the source of all the opposition. But this is headed someplace. And from here, we'll skip to the very end of the story. We'll skip the middle and go to the end of the story, as told to us by the prophet Yeshayahu. And that's the last source on the page. Hadavar asher chaza Yeshayahu ben Amoz al Yehuda v'Yerushalayim, says the prophet Yeshayahu, v'haya b'acharit ha'amim. This is what will happen at the end of days. This is the vision. Nachon yeh har beit Hashem b'rosh ha'arim. The day will come when the Beit HaMikdash, just up the road from here, will metaphorically rise above all the mountains. All nations of the world, the entire world, will come streaming to Yerushalayim. And many, many nations will come, and this is what they shall say. They will recognize the true God, and they will recognize Elokei Yaakov. They will recognize our mission and our role. And they will finally admit the truth. Let us go up to the mountain of God, v'yoreinu midracha v'nelcha b'yorchotav, so that He may teach us His ways and we may walk in His paths. Ki mitzion teitze Torah udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. And how many of us know? We all sing that pasuk every Shabbat. And how many of us realize that when the Torah leaves, goes forth from Tzion and Yerushalayim, and that pasuk, it's not going out to the Jewish people in the exile. It's going out from Tzion, which is the seat of the Jewish people, to the entire world, to all of humanity. And I apologize, I seem to have left off. I think I put it there in the English. I neglected to put the coming pasukim, v'chitetu charvotam li'itim, v'chanitoteyam l'mazmerot, they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Lo yisa goyel goy cherev, lo yimudu od milchama. The day will come that there will be peace on earth. And if you think that day is so far off, that very institution that we mentioned earlier, the United Nations, which at times seems to be have been created for the sole purpose of creating a forum to bash Am Yisrael, but it's really ultimately a forum for advancing the mission of Am Yisrael. And if you stop and think about it for a minute, we can get so angry at the United Nations. If you just take a step back and think about the fact that right now, there is a building somewhere in the world. It's not in Yerushalayim yet. It's in New York. But there's a building in the world where every nation on earth sends a person, a representative, to sit in the same room, every nation on earth, and to talk about making peace. They don't really do it. But still, how close is that to this vision of Yeshayahu and the words of these words of Yeshayahu are on the wall outside? Our messages are being heard. But there's resistance. And if we want to solve the problem of anti-Semitism, I can say it only the way my friend Gershon did. We have to be Semites. We have to commit ourselves to these messages and to representing these messages. That's the only solution. Nothing else. All of the money that's been spent in the multi-billion dollar organizations in America and other places that are meant to fight anti-Semitism may do a lot of important work, but they will never solve the problem. The only thing that will solve the problem is bringing the world towards the vision of Yeshayahu. And therefore, as we have just, it seems, completed another round, and none of us are fooling ourselves to think that this is the last round, hopefully we'll emerge from this in a better position, and hopefully the next round will be able to be successful with less difficulties. But ultimately, the way in which we're going to win the war is through committing ourselves to our values and to representing those values. And therefore, indeed, I think what we did tonight, to come at a time of crisis and to spend some time in tefillah and in Torah, this is really something that not only reinforces and enriches us, but really is the ultimate way in which we're going to win these wars. May it happen speedily in our time. Thank you very much, and have a good night.